Hello and welcome to Grad Chat, your opportunity to find out about graduate research here at Queen's. My name is KM on the FM, and I am your host for this week's Grad Chat. A show like this could not happen without the support of the School of Graduate Studies and Postdoctoral Affairs, and CFRC, so a big thank you to both of them. If you miss the show at any time, you can download the podcast the next day on either iTunes, Google Podcasts, Spotify, or CFRC Podcast. It is a great way for you to stay informed about all the exciting research our graduate students and postdocs are working on. And today, I would like to introduce you to Mateos Kervet, who is finishing up his master's in computing under the supervision of Dr. Sydney Gavigi. Welcome to GradChat.
Hello. Thanks for having me.
Well, thank you so much for joining us today. And I know you're finishing up your master's, which is quite exciting. Could you tell us a little bit more about your academic journey as you're kind of wrapping up one degree? Where did you complete your undergraduate studies?
Sure. I'm Brazilian, and I did my undergrad in my hometown. Mm-hmm. It's a city in the south of Brazil called Cascavel. It translates to rattlesnake. It has that name because when people went to the city first, there were a ton of rattlesnakes. Not anymore. Now it's a city of like 400,000 people. Mm. It's so big. And I did my undergrad in computer science, and then I... close to the end, I decided I wanted to pursue a career in research. Mm. And unfortunately, in Brazil, research is not a very viable career option. There's not enough funding for research. So people that do go for a master's or a PhD, they usually end up going to academia and working as professors. And even as professors, there's not a lot of research being done. It's more teaching. So I wanted to go to industry and work as an industry researcher. So to do that, I realized that I needed to leave my home country, you know? And then Canada was an option, so that's how I came to Queen's.
Okay, and was there anything in particular that attracted you to Queen's to do your master's research?
Yeah, lots, actually. One of the things that was really made me interesting about Queen's was Kingston, because it's a smaller town, not as busy as, say, Toronto or Vancouver, but there's so much to do. It's a city with so much soul, you know, and living here, I confirm that. It's a great place to live, and I personally am a firm believer in having work-life balance, and I think that this is the kind of thing that living in a city like Kingston can provide during your graduate studies, because it's such a busy and challenging time of our lives, right?
So definitely.
You don't want to add more pressure of, I don't know, spending more than an hour or two every day in traffic, having to struggle so much to pay crazy rent, you know? So not that it's super cheap here, you know, but Toronto and Vancouver, it's like so much worse, right? And not to mention the excellence. The School of Computing has so many amazing professors doing so many great research, you know. And Professor Gavigi, like, I looked at his publications and wow, you know.
Well, and now you are a part of that, right? Which is really excellent. Or your thesis is titled Collaborative Perception Under Adverse Weather Conditions. Can you tell us a little bit what that means?
Sure. So collaborative perception is a subfield of perception for autonomous vehicles.
Okay.
So making a vehicle drive by themselves is a very challenging thing. There's a lot of parts to it. And the usual description is that you have to first get sensing information from the sensors, cameras, radar, GPS, LiDAR, and then making sense of what's around the vehicle. Then you use that information to make decisions.
Okay.
With those decisions, then you have to specifically determine what are the actions to be done. Mm-hmm. So accelerate, brake, turn left, right, that kind of thing. So there's a lot of steps to it. Mm-hmm. My research focused on the very beginning, which is the perception part, is making sense of the data that comes from the sensors, you know? And within perception, there is this kind of new subfield, which is collaborative perception, which has the idea that, well, in maybe a few years' time, we'll have lots of autonomous vehicles around. Mm-hmm. So what if they could tell each other what they're perceiving, you know? So if there is challenging scenarios like occlusion, for instance, mm-hmm. or situations like adverse weather mm-hmm. where the performance of the sensors is degraded, if they can tell each other what they're perceiving, it makes everything safer, mm-hmm. you know? Mm-hmm. So my master's focus specifically on collaborative perception under adverse weather conditions, because collaborative perception is a field that I would say it's roughly 4 or 5 years old.
Oh, wow. So you're right on the cutting edge. You're on the cusp of very, very new things. That's exciting.
Yeah, it is. And even though the field has 4 or 5 years old, there's been very, very little research done on how that can be done in the context of adverse weather conditions like rain, fog, you know.
Mm-hmm. So you mentioned there's a lot of different information and data coming in from all these different sensors and I guess things that are giving the autonomous vehicle input. And then you're trying to make all of these different systems within each vehicle speak to one another. So how does that all work? How do you parse through all of that information and how do you assist the autonomous vehicle in making decisions based on its perception and the perception of other vehicles around it?
Yeah, it is pretty challenging.
Yeah, so it sounds very complicated.
It is. But it's fun. I really enjoy it. So there's different approaches to it. And the approach that has been most used in the literature is that if you just take raw sensor information, that's too much data. You know, so you have to communicate that data. And ideally, you would do that in almost real time, right? So raw data is too much. Mm-hmm. But every autonomous vehicle, even the ones that are working by themselves, the way we make sense of all that data is with AI. It's with deep learning models. So if we use the result of my AI model, so what it perceived mm-hmm. around it, mm-hmm. if we just use that result, then it's too little information, mm-hmm. you know, because what if the model doesn't get things perfectly, mm-hmm. you know, and then the errors compound, you know? So, and you end up losing information about the surroundings, you mm-hmm. know? So what people usually do is within the deep learned model, they get the intermediate features, you know? And then those features are communicated. And then for collaborative perception, we need models that will take as input data from different vehicles, you know?
Okay.
And you can even make other agents mm-hmm. collaborate as well. There is research being done for having drones collaborating mm-hmm. with the vehicles. There's some people, I don't think that is a very promising step, but there is some people also considering, I don't know, having data from smartphones, you know? So pedestrians mm-hmm. could be joining the collaboration mm-hmm. scheme. But the main thing is having either just cars mm-hmm. or cars and roadside units. So mm-hmm. you have, I don't know, cameras at an intersection. Mm-hmm. You know, those cameras could be like joining the collaboration and telling everyone, hey, there's this happening there.
There was a fender bender at this intersection and be aware.
Yeah.
Well, it sounds like, because I can only imagine how hard it would be to compare different information from one type of vehicle to another, because I'm it sounds a little bit like comparing apples to oranges at times, right? If you know the weather conditions affecting a drone might be very different than those affecting a vehicle and what they have to be concerned about. So I as from a very public armchair perspective, mm-hmm. I can understand how making those kind of connections could be difficult. So trying to find data that is valuable across vehicles and across other agents, like you said, that can all better inform driving. And I can only imagine, but I guess you can tell me more, what makes adverse weather conditions so challenging for autonomous vehicles? Because I'm thinking even, you know, driving in Kingston winters, you know, one street to the next, the road conditions can really vary. So could you tell us a little bit about what makes these conditions challenging for autonomous vehicles and how can collaborative perception help with some of those challenges?
Sure. Yeah. So just making a car drive by themselves is a very challenging mm-hmm. thing, but it has been done, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Everyone that drives knows this. We have a lot of boring scenarios in driving. Most of driving is very boring, you know? Mm-hmm. It's just, I have to keep on my lane, you know? Like, make sure no one, like, just jump mm-hmm. ahead of me, you know?
And many times, right, if you drive the same route all the time, sometimes your mind wanders and all of a sudden you're like, I'm at work again. How did I get here? Safely.
Yeah.
But you just do those automatic boring things.
Yeah, mm-hmm. no. Most of it, and the research shows mm-hmm. that it's something like 98% of driving, it's so boring.
Oh, wow.
It's so predictable, you know? but you have those edge cases, you know, you have those crazy situations that you have to react in a split second, right? So adverse weather goes more towards that edge case scenario thing because it doesn't rain all the time.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't snow all the time. It's not completely foggy that you can't even see in front of you properly. You know, that happens, I don't know, a couple of days a year, you know?
And not even consistently across an area, right? You drive through one patch of fog and then cross the street and then the fog's lifted a little bit. So it's constantly evolving.
Exactly, exactly. And even an adverse weather condition that I tried to explore in my master's was glare. So the sun is setting or the sun is rising and then you have that super blinding light like right in front of you, you know? So if you just turn right, there's no more light bothering you, you know? So it changes a lot. So those kinds of situations, they don't happen all the time. And they make the sensor performance like really, really degrade, you know? So the same way it's challenging for us to make sense of things when it's too dark, when it's too foggy, when there's so much rain or snow that you can barely see, I don't know, like 20 meters in front of you. The same thing is true for sensors like cameras and even LiDARs, you know? So by having vehicles collaborating, we can hope that, well, I can only see 20 meters in front of me, but 20 meters in front of me, there might be a vehicle that can tell me what he's seeing, you know? So we can all share our perceptions and then we can have a much broader field of view, you know? So that's something that really helps to increase the perception when those challenging situations happen.
Oh, no, that sounds helpful for those who are looking to kind of crowdsource safety
on
the road. Yeah. So this, it makes a lot of sense. This work seems very applied. But how have you tested all of this? So what have you been doing during your master's to try all of this? Because I imagine you can't exactly take AVs out on the road and around Kingston at this point to do this type of testing. So how have you been approaching this in your master's?
Yeah, you mentioned something that is a very big challenge and within this specific subfield that I entered, which is getting real data. This is so tricky. Queens has I think more than one autonomous vehicle. And there's the auto drive team, the undergrad team, they have a car. My supervisor with another professor, Professor Nuruddin, they also have a car, which recently they even published a huge data set with the car getting data around Kingston.
Oh, very cool.
Yeah. But for collaborative perception, you need more than one.
Yes.
One is not enough anymore. And for collaborative perception under adverse weather conditions, you can't collect data anytime. You need those adverse weather situations to happen. So it makes it super impractical to get real data. So the answer was, okay, let's go to simulation.
Oh, good. Yes, you can't wait for a winter storm and then hope that you can get data that day, right? So, so what type of simulations?
Oh, it's foggy. Let's get the car.
Yes, exactly. Yes. I'm sure the car is a heavily scheduled hot commodity as well if everyone is wanting to use the AV. So you develop simulations or you work with those. How does that play out?
Yeah. So there is a very popular open source simulator used by people in self-driving research called Carla.
Okay.
And Carla, think of it as a kind of a sandbox thing, a sandbox world where you can decide where you are going to put a car. It has some maps with cities and intersections and things like that. But you have a lot of freedom to do so many different things within Carla. It's for people that have worked with game design, it's pretty much like having a game engine with some pre-made assets there.
Okay.
So within Carla, we set up everything, set up scenarios, and we set up scenarios that felt meaningful from a practical point of view. We wanted scenarios that were challenging, scenarios that really made the perception algorithms to struggle and to see if collaborative perception would make those situations better. So we looked at real data from lots of reports from the United States National Health Traffic Administration, and we found some interesting situations because in the field, sometimes people will just randomly decide, well, highways are an interesting situation. off-ramps from highways, they're an interesting scenario. Mm-hmm. And then you see the real data, and in fact, those are not the most interesting scenarios, you know, for perception.
Okay, so no problem getting merging or getting off of the highway, but...
not from a perception point mm-hmm. of view, because those situations, you can perceive your environment mm-hmm. very well. Those might be more challenging from a perspective of control,
okay.
of how, mm-hmm. how you control the car mm-hmm. when it's going faster, mm-hmm. right? But then that's later in the,
yes,
in the pipeline.
You're still at the beginning, yes, yes. So of the process.
Yeah.
Okay.
So we got data from what would be interesting scenarios for perception algorithms.
So and what are some of those interesting scenarios? What are some examples of what is hard to perceive?
So lots and lots and lots of crashes happen in intersections.
Okay.
Intersections are challenging mm-hmm. because there's a lot of variables to it, a lot of erratic behavior, right? Mm-hmm. So we consider both urban scenarios mm-hmm. and rural scenarios. Mm-hmm. And in rural scenarios, there's a lot of things involved. Mm-hmm. Curved roads, mm-hmm. you know, when you get a known junction, you have accidents happening and troubles mm-hmm. with perceiving objects around you. In level roads, mm-hmm. non-level roads, you know, straight roads, mm-hmm. there's a whole variety to it, you know. Mm-hmm. So we basically picked up five scenarios, so which we try to make them a little bit general, not extremely specific. And then by using those five road configurations, then we simulated lots of different adverse weather combinations there. So clear weather, of course, we need to have a baseline, but also light rain, heavy rain, fog, foggy, heavy rain. have you ever seen that?
It is not pleasant to drive in.
Not at all. and even glare, as I mentioned. Mm-hmm. Glare, from all that we looked in the literature, it was not something that was explored in collaborative perception. So, well, let's do it, right? And the results for glare were pretty interesting because when we are thinking about collaborative perception, there's always a main vehicle, right? Mm-hmm. The main vehicle we call the ego, meaning like the self, right? Mm-hmm. So the ego, its perception in glare, it's terrible because there's a lot of light, very strong light coming its way. But by collaborating with the other agents, it's so much better. You know, it's improved so much, you know. Yeah.
Oh, so that's well, it makes sense though, right? As soon as you can get away from that one bit of sunlight, you're able to see again as a human driver. So it makes a lot of sense with collaborative perception as well, that as long as you can pull data from other places that aren't, you know, driving straight into the sunset, you're able to make better sense of the road areas around and go from there. So you did a lot of testing. What is something from your research that you would like to pursue further? Like what's something you want to know more of now that you've done all of this work for your master's?
So the main thing of the master's was creating the simulated data set and simulating all those scenarios and making sure everything was running smoothly, that everything made sense. We looked at real data to account for which scenarios to pick, what kind of sensor configurations to use and everything. But then once the data set was done, we had this idea to, well, now that we have those adverse weather scenarios that are challenging for collaborative perception AI models, let's make a model then. And that was so challenging. That was so difficult. And it's something we tried to do, but then because of the timing of the masters, that's something we put aside.
Okay.
And instead, our idea was, okay, let's look at the existing models and improve their robustness to adverse weather. And that's what I did at the last few months of my master's. But definitely then that would be an avenue for future research, right? To create a model, that an AI model that is a lot more robust to all those adverse weather conditions that we have created in the simulation.
Is that something that you would like to pursue in the future, or... Because I know you mentioned you wanted to be a researcher. Is that a next step for your research, or what is your next step for your research?
To be completely honest, I don't know.
That's totally fair. Yeah.
It is a very interesting field, that's for sure. Mm-hmm. And I already got a lot of familiarity with it. I will be doing my PhD here at Queen's.
Oh, congratulations.
Thank you. Starting in September. So people listening to this, I will not be a master's student anymore. I'll be a PhD already.
Yes, you will. That'll be exciting.
Yeah. So in my PhD, the idea is to keep working with autonomous vehicles and perception for them. But what specifically are we going to target? Mm-hmm. That is still not defined, especially because in the PhD, you have a lot more time.
Yes, you'll have. Yes. Hopefully double the time, right? And ideally to deep dive into something. And now that you've already done all of this work, if you continue pursuing this, you have already a wealth of knowledge to work from instead of having to start from scratch, so to say, right?
Yeah.
So.
No, but at the same time, as I was doing all this work and reading about the field, there are a lot of open questions that we found, a lot of different things that could be worked on. And even in the context of adverse weather conditions, there's a question of how to do that. So thinking of an AI model, there's lots of different kinds of AI models being used nowadays. So one thing that has been used a lot for single vehicle perception that I don't think I have seen for collaborative perception is something called the diffusion model.
Okay.
So that's something that could be used. LLMs like ChatGPT, which are the large language models, there's people doing visual large language models and vision large language models, sorry. And how to integrate those large models to the self-driving pipeline, you know. So there's a lot of things that are very, very important right now for self-driving and collaborative perception. So let's see.
Yes. It sounds like you're going to have the challenge of trying to pare down all of your interests and ideas, you're going to have to be selective, I guess. And so you've almost got too many options, which I think is a good place to be, right?
Yeah.
You get to explore a little bit and then find what feels best.
Yeah.
So that's exciting. As this airs, we'll be excited to see how you're doing in your PhD, and hopefully we can have you back on Grad Chat in the future once you've kind of chosen the direction and you've got some more work done. But I hear that you're also outside of your research on vehicles. This is a bit of a stretch, but I know you're also a big Formula One fan.
I am.
So who are your favorite drivers right now, and what is exciting to you about Formula One?
Lewis Hamilton.
Very nice.
When I started watching Formula One, I felt a little off about him. He seemed like that kind of celebrity that just is very fake, you know? And then I realized, I saw some interviews, you know, and I realized that he's actually very real, you know? And he's a very big activist for a lot of causes, the main one being having black kids in STEM, you know, in motorsport, but also just in engineering as a whole. So he has a lot of initiatives. He does a lot of things that he doesn't even advertise about, you know. The Met Gala, he once got a full table with black designers.
Very, very nice.
And it's not something that he advertised much, you know. It just, the Met Gala happened and there he was in a table with lots of designers that he sponsored, you know. So he's the kind of people that puts his money where his mouth is. So
he just acts quietly on his values and then people report on it after. But he's just doing that because that's who he is. That's what it sounds like.
So I got to really admire Lewis Hamilton as I got to watch more and more Formula One. But unfortunately, right now, he's not doing the best.
Oh, okay.
So he will not be a champion this year. Probably not. So a champion contender right now is to be possibly... his first champion will be Oscar Piastri, and he's the guy I'm hoping. Let's go, Piastri.
And what do you like about Formula One? What excites you about it?
It's the racing itself is so much fun. There's a lot of unpredictability. There are races that are honestly very boring. That the way it begins, it's the way it ends. But when you least expect, you will see insanely good drives from the drivers. You see, I don't know, it starts to rain and then everyone has to stop and put the wet tires, and then things become chaotic, and then it's when you see the drivers and their skill really making a difference. But it's also a team sport. Every driver is part of a team and they have a teammate, and sometimes you see the team making a lot of the difference with crazy strategies, something like, oh, this is not going to work. But then it does. And then they win the race. And you're on the edge of your seat. How did that work, you know?
It sounds like, what I'm hearing, it sounds like there's a lot of similarity between kind of what you described in your research, right? It's sometimes, a lot of the time, driving can be pretty boring. Maybe not Formula One boring, but it can be pretty regular. And then when there's these kind of challenges or adverse conditions, everyone adjusts, and that's the excitement piece. And that sounds kind of, I mean, I could be stretching here, but that sounds like what you're doing as well, as you're stretching and finding those challenges and then coming up with a solution within your team, within your lab, really quickly, and trying to figure out how to come around those.
Yeah, and F1 has been using so much data to predict those kinds of situations, obviously satellite data and weather forecasts, but the whole data science that's going on behind F1 teams, they have massive companies supporting them. So Red Bull, for instance, one of the teams, their title sponsor is Oracle, which is one of the biggest tech companies around. Maybe not for the general public, but every person that has coded has probably heard of Java. And Oracle is the company behind Java, you know?
So maybe there's a research career for you in F1 in the future. You could pull your research and your hobbies together. Would that be something you would be interested in if you could work for a data team of F1?
My main interest in research is really on computer vision, which is using these AI models for perception. I don't see that being the case for F1, but there is a very new racing series of autonomous vehicles.
Oh, very cool. Okay.
They look like formula cars, and they have done their first competition. I think it was late last year, and it was super chaotic. they would stop on the track because they thought there was an object ahead, and then they would have problems with their algorithms. But things are developing quite fast, right?
Well, perhaps you'll get to test some of your future models on a different track. And I know from the beginning you mentioned that you have really enjoyed your time in Kingston, and I know you've been quite active. And I see that you were an events ambassador for Queens. Could you tell us a little bit about that experience?
Sure, yeah. So there's this group in Queens called Queens Events. So anyone can go to their Instagram, Queens Events. And it's basically this idea started by an alumni, Sarah Witiuk, I think that's how you pronounce her name. And it was this whole idea of giving people the information of what's happening in Kingston. Because she felt that a lot of the times she would hear about the cool things happening after they happened. So there's that whole FOMO kind of feeling, you know. And so let's give that information to students and let's try to put all that information together. So I started following the page before moving to Canada. I got my acceptance, I think it was something like March.
Okay,
and then I just came in end of August to Kingston. So I wanted to know everything about Queens, about Kingston, and even CFRC. I was listening to CFRC before coming here, and it was a lot of fun. And by following the Queens Events Instagram page, I saw that they had a position open for ambassador. And the idea is simple. You just go to events and you post about it so people can see how the event is, right? And then I did that for my first year here in Kingston. I did that and it was so much fun. It was a great excuse to just leave home and go explore the city and find cool things to do.
Yeah, because sometimes the thing is there's so many things happening.
Yeah.
In Kingston and at Queens that you almost don't know what to choose. So what were some of your favorite events from that year while you were an ambassador? What are some things you tried?
Oh, wow. I went to so many concerts, more indie rock concerts, classical music at the Isabel. I would say that my number one favorite was the Intercultural Arts Fest. It happens every year. So I think it's in August. So
that sounds right to me. Yes. Yeah.
So people hearing, go next year.
Yes.
But coming from Brazil, in Brazil, you don't have as much multiculturalism as you have in Canada. Brazil is a melting pot of cultures. So we had a lot of people coming from all over the world, you know, to Brazil. But then you don't see those cultures as they were originally. Mm. It all gets blended together, you know? So, I don't know, we have sushi pizza, like we have had them for years, you know? Mm-hmm. There's the Russian dish stroganoff, and there's the Arabic dish sfiha. We have stroganoff, sfiha, you know? Like Brazil does this crazy combinations of things. So you have a very varied and diverse culture, but you don't really have the traditions. Mm. You don't have the originals.
More of the nuance to some of the traditions. And, yeah. Yes.
So coming to Canada and going to the Intercultural Arts Fest, I saw traditional dance, traditional music, you know, from all over the world. Traditional dishes, though, those were so good, you know. So it felt really special and it reminded me why when deciding where to do my master's, the country I picked was Canada. Mm-hmm. And a lot of it was not only because of research excellence and because it's a great place to live, but because of the multiculturalism. Mm. I felt like Canada would be a country where I would be welcomed and that I would get to meet people from all over the world and their cultures would be appreciated here. Mm-hmm. And that's definitely the case. And it's awesome.
Well, I'm glad that you had great experiences with Queen's events. And hopefully, like you said, everyone listening can attend next summer's Intercultural Fair Arts Fest.
Yeah.
And check out some amazing events throughout the whole year in the community and on campus, because there's so much going on.
Yeah,
right?
I sometimes talk to people and they say there's nothing happening in Kingston, and then I look at them baffled. What do you mean? There's so much going on, you know. I think it's just a matter of what you look for and where to look for, you know. So the city of Kingston itself organizes so many things. Mm-hmm. At Queen's, you have so many student groups and even the groups from the university, like the School of Graduate Studies. There's so many things happening all the time.
There are. And if I can pitch the School of Graduate Studies and Postdoctoral Affairs, we have an excellent weekly newsletter that tries to compile events mostly on campus, but we do include off-campus events as well, and things, scholarships, events, opportunities. So that's one way to stay in touch and get a heads up about some of the stuff that's happening around.
Yeah, for sure. For anyone thinking Kingston doesn't have much to do, I would say just think about what interests you and look out. I would say that there is, you know, there's things happening for every type of interest. For people more interested in sports, there's so many games happening all year
and
long.
So many teams that you can join. And
Music, arts, you know, crafts, more nerdy things, you know, like board games. There's things for everyone.
Yes, we're very, very lucky to have strong communities around interests and who are quite welcoming, I would say, too. I've done different things in the time that I've lived here, and I've never, anytime you dabble in a new community, they're usually quite welcoming.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Get you into their activity as well. Well, thank you so much, Mateos. It's been great chatting with you. Thanks for doing Grad Chat, and good luck with the PhD. And as I said, hopefully we'll get a chance to speak with you as your doctoral research gets underway in the future.
Thank you so much for having me. It was great fun to talk to you.
Well, so that's it, everyone. Another week of Grad Chat comes to an end. Don't forget, you can download the show tomorrow from either iTunes, Google Podcast, Spotify, or CFRC Podcast. Just search Grad Chat. And until next week, this is KM on the FM.
Thank you for listening to this podcast produced at CFRC 101.9 FM at Queen's University, situated on the traditional territory of the Anishinaabe and Haudenosaunee peoples, and brought to you by the generous support of the Faculty of Engineering and Applied Science.